One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
This is Lou Elizondo, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined once again on the podcast by the former head of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and now number one best-selling author for the New York Times, Mr. Luis Elizondo. Lou, welcome back to the podcast.
Andy, thank you so much for being here and allowing me to be here with you and your audience. Really appreciate it. Always love your show.
It's been too long, so let's get straight into it, Lou, because there is a whole load to get through. The world has changed in the last couple of years since you've been away, let's call it, but you've never completely gone away. You've had some time, and I want to start off with the here and now, talking about the book. Now, when you left the conversation, your public-facing conversation, you said there was a reason you had to write this book. And I wonder, in the last few weeks since Imminent was released, are your reasons for writing the book justified?
Wow. Let me first of all explain why I wrote the book. And the answer, actually, you know, I'm going to answer your question in reverse. Yes, I think it was worthwhile. Let me go into the reasons why I wrote the book. Written word is indelible. I can get on mainstream media and have a 5-minute snippet of an interview, but that gets kind of converted into ones and zeros and gets into the Ethernet of the world. Written word is a little different. Written word outlives those who write it. In fact, it's a reason why I say before why the ancient Egyptians wrote the Book of the Dead on papyrus. It's the reason why the Magna Carta was written on parchment, and it's the reason why in our country, things like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are written down, because they outlive the authors. And it is an account of as things are occurring and how they are occurring by the observer. And no one can take that away. Furthermore, when you do that, in my case, when I wrote the book, from my perspective, no one can edit it. No one can add things to it. What you see is what you get. It also had to go in for a security review with the Pentagon. And let's not forget, takes a while. Unfortunately, in my case, it took almost a year. But once it gets released, that is the official stamp from the government saying, okay, yes, you've done the right thing. There's nothing classified in here. And even then, Andy, they redacted portions. I was very careful to try to keep the book as unclassified as possible. And even then, you can see in the book that there are portions that have been redacted by the Pentagon. And I made the deliberate decision to leave them in there like that, because I wanted the public to read that and see for themselves, this is an area of the UAP topic the government doesn't want me talking about, right? And that's important because for those who, at this point, anybody still believes the government wasn't involved in the UFO program, that's proof that they were, right? You don't redact something if it's not sensitive. And you don't redact something about a UFO if it's not real. And so I was trying to explain that. I didn't want to tip my hand at the time to some of the folks at the Pentagon that I was actually using that process to some degree to our advantage, because it demonstrates proof positive that there are aspects of the book they still don't want to have conversations about. And it's used to help reemphasize the validity and the importance of this topic. And so that was my motivation for writing the book. It's why I wanted to write it. Again, at the time, I couldn't say it exactly because I did not want the folks in the Pentagon to understand that that's what I was trying to achieve. And then they would have reasons to slow it down or perhaps redact even more. So it was a little bit of a delicate dance, but that was the reason why. And I even said that it would be clear once I wrote the book why I was doing it. And that's why I was doing it.
Are any of those redactions that were left in there surprising to you? Was there anything you thought that will clear but didn't?
Well, I was aggressive in trying to put what in there, what I thought needed to be in there, but there was actually a lot more that I realized I wouldn't be able to have published. And so I had to make an internal decision because I could let it sit there in limbo for the next 3 years. Meanwhile, the conversation is languishing and you've got, you know, agent provocateurs putting out false information and disinformation. Or I could say, okay, let me compromise. Let me put out what I'm reasonably comfortable with that the Pentagon will allow me to write, push that envelope just a little, and let them tell me what I can't. And that was the strategy I used. And I think it was effective. Look, they approved it, right? So, and I'm not going to jail for it.
No, and that's a good thing for many. I'm sure some people would love to see you in jail, Lou, as you know. But there's
or worse.
Absolutely. There's plenty who don't. But during your time away, there's been some big talking points, and those are included in the book. So let me start by asking you about ARRO, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, and its former leader, now former leader, Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, who was a particularly divisive character in the UFO conversation over the last couple of years now. He claims to have never seen anything extraordinary, no evidence of anything extraterrestrial, non-human, whatever label you want to put on this topic. But I wonder, to the best of your knowledge, did Sean Kirkpatrick, when he was with ARRO, see any of the material that we have heard long exists, for example, longer versions of the gimbal video?
Yeah, I can't speak on behalf of Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, but what I can say from an outside observer, he's also the same guy who said he did not attend a certain meeting on Capitol Hill only to have a photograph of him at that very meeting on Capitol Hill, right? Also, when you look at the actual reports that came out, they were wrong. They were inaccurate. You know, he was saying things like, oh, we didn't talk to any whistleblowers. Yeah, he did, because I know who they talked to. You know, one of them was me, and I know what I told them for 3 hours. So, you know, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of false information, a lot of those reports that they put out early on. I want to give ARRO every fair shake possible. I hope this new leadership does the right thing. I'm really rooting for them. I want them to do the right thing. I'm not asking to agree. What I'm asking to do is do their due diligence. In some cases, you know, the old leadership, they went to an office, knocked on the door and said, excuse me, do you have any UFO information? They said, no, get out of here, kid. Okay. And then went back home. They did not have the proper access or clearances, despite what anybody might tell you. I know because there's organizations of people that work in these organizations that told me they never came to us, Lou. So, okay, well, then you don't ask, you're not going to get. So there was, you know, a lot of problems. Now, part of it could be that they were a new organization, you know, and there was a lot of pressure on them from Congress. So I do want to, you know, I don't want to just sit there and be the attack dog and, you know, point fingers. They did a lot of dumb things and a lot of things wrong. But I'm sure, you know, a lot of the folks there that are still there did a lot of things right. And I want to give them credit for it. And I'm hoping that those individuals are the continuity for the new leadership. And, you know, maybe they'll do a little better job, a little better due diligence on the reports that they provide. I mean, some of it was just factually wrong. And that report got ripped. This last report got ripped to shreds into ribbons by just about everybody and anybody, to the point that even the director of national intelligence, right, the co-sponsor of ARRO, refused to endorse the report. I don't know what to tell you. That that's not a good look. When one of your bosses says, I'm not going to endorse this, maybe you should go back and do some more homework.
So you think then Arrow still has a chance of giving something positive to the whole UFO disclosure movement?
Sure they do, of course. Look, there's salvation and vindication for everybody, man. I mean, it's never too late, brother. I'm actively rooting for them, man. I heard the new guy happens to be former friends of somebody I know, a colleague that I respect. So I'm very hopeful that this person is going to be able to do the right thing. Some of the investigators that are part of Arrow, I personally know from former jobs, former lives, and they're good people. They're damn fine investigators, or at least they were. So, I want Arrow to win. I want them to succeed. You know, I also want them to do their job right. You know, and unfortunately, in the past, you know, they've got some making up to do. And again, I don't want to paint Arrow with a broad stroke and blame everybody in Arrow, because ultimately you have to blame the leader. It falls on the leadership's shoulder for all successes and failures, period. And so if there's a failure, you blame the leadership. Look, if a mission went bad and I was in charge, I took responsibility. I got no problem doing that. You know, holding yourself accountable is very, very important. I think the track record is very clear. Certain individuals were only there for a very short period of time in certain positions and left. And then, were asked to leave, you know, their other advising capacity as well. So again, I don't want this conversation to devolve into, you know, accusations and pointing fingers at people. As a personal human being, I'm not attacking Sean Kirkpatrick. In his professional capacity, I think he was very ineffective. But that's a professional perspective. As an individual, I'm sure Sean's probably a great guy. He probably pays his bills and loves his children and you know, is an American patriot and wants to serve his country. So there's a difference between the public persona, the hat that they wear when they're serving the public, and their private life. And I don't want to rally people up and you know, show up with pitchforks and torches to Sean's house, because I've been told that, you know, he has been threatened. And there's no room for that. Look, I'm threatened on a regular basis. It's not fun. And Sean's got kids. He's got a family. You know, people need to leave his family out of it. They need to leave his kids out of it. You know, that's nonsense. And anybody who engages in that type of behavior or activity, no friend of mine, I absolutely not. I will stand shoulder to shoulder with Sean Kirkpatrick and absolutely condemn such behavior. There is no excuse for that. You know, professional performance versus personal character. I don't care what your opinion is. There's no excuse for that.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. Another incident, if that new organization or new leadership wanted some low-hanging fruit, an event that happened in February 2023 or in late January 2023 was the shootdown of the Chinese spy balloon, which unfolded rather publicly on US and then world television. And it started to get a little bit like a movie like Signs or something, or Independence Day, where over the course of a few weeks, we suddenly had quote-unquote UAP UFOs on the news being shot down over Alaska. And it seemed odd at the time because we were told that basically US sensor systems were adjusted to then pick up more sensitive objects, which ended up with this Chinese spy balloon, relatively low-tech, which was doing a rather efficient job, it seemed. But there seemed a real lack of any official follow-up on the three unknown objects. And I wonder, is that something you followed up yourself and you can speak on?
So let's start with the incident. And this is why I find it humorous, right? Because we have been telling people for years, oh, we have complete air domain awareness of our skies. We know what's up there. And we were tracking baseball sizes at 8,000 feet. And nothing to worry about, folks. We got everything under control. As soon as we start recalibrating our radar systems to look for UAP, what happens? Boop, we start seeing these balloons the size of a football field, you know, just wafting over northern continental United States, collecting intelligence from the Chinese. Who knows how many times they've been doing that for how many years, right? And what they've collected. And, oh, well, guess what? I guess we really don't have full air domain awareness of our country, do we? No, we don't. And that was rather embarrassing.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
There are certain adversarial capabilities. Now, on a serious note, there are certain adversarial capabilities that I cannot expound upon. And there are reasons why our government may or may not want to say what that was. There could be certain sensor collection capabilities. There could be certain, other performance capabilities that we are not prepared to let our adversaries of the world know that we know, right?
Yeah.
So one thing is a balloon where you can take a picture from a U-2 and you can shoot it down and it comes down. Another thing is if it's something else. UFO or UAP or not, it could very well be adversarial. The problem is in a information vacuum, anytime you have a vacuum of information, a lack thereof of information, people naturally want to insert their own narrative into that. And it's human nature. It's not that they're doing this deceptively. They're not trying to fool the public. It's just, it's human nature to do that. We're kind of wired to do that, to kind of jump to a conclusion in order to avoid a threat. We look at something, and if we see, for example, at night behind a bush, a shape, and our minds say, that's a tiger, right? In reality, chances are 9 out of 10 times it's not a tiger. It's just another bush. But the one time it's a tiger, it can eat you. So for survival, we are wired to insert narratives and information when there's a lack of complete information. And so when people say those were UFOs or they were this or they were that, it could also be a very conventional technology, but something that we haven't seen before. And we're not prepared to have that discussion publicly until we have an opportunity to really understand how this capability works and what can it do and whatnot. So I don't want to comment precisely on that because of the reasons I just stated. There are very conventional reasons why you don't necessarily want to elaborate on something until it's appropriate to do so. I know there was a lot of speculation. I tend to not really listen to the rumors very much because rumors tend to be just rumors. There's always, maybe a grain of truth to a rumor, but usually what people wind up hearing is not really at all, based in truth or reality.
And that's fair. You could have came on here and speculated or leaned on the side of it being something anomalous or exotic or exciting. And I think it was the same with the UAP Task Force report way back when we had a whole section of shape of UAP that was redacted. And I think a lot of folks got excited, which is fair enough, given the title and the huge redaction. However, I would believe a lot of those shapes are of adversarial technologies or even US technologies that have come across the wrong sensors. And you don't want China, Russia, and whatever knowing what you have.
I mean, there's prosaic reasons for a lot of things. In fact, back at the Pentagon, we went into an investigation trying to consider it being prosaic, being some sort of normal technology, and a lot of the times it was. It was when you had information that really fell within those five observables, then things started to change a little bit. You start saying, okay, well, this is not conventional. What exactly are we looking at? So we have to kind of avoid. The problem is if you want to see a UFO, you start seeing UFOs everywhere, right? And most of the time, they're really not. They're high altitude balloons, or it's a quadcopter, or a misidentified aircraft, or a helicopter, or a drone, a missile, or something like that, or an atmospheric anomaly or aberration. So we have to kind of resist the urge, even though we're interested in UFOs, to allow our zeal for the topic to cloud our ability to collect information, if that makes sense.
You talk throughout your book about your struggles coming out and having this conversation internally, externally. You talk about others like David Grush, who obviously made quite a splash worldwide when he came out and had the conversations he did. You're lucky enough, you mentioned, to call him a friend, not only a colleague. Also in your book, though, you talk about being approached by a member of the Collins elite in the halls of power and telling you, you know, this is demonic, right? This is a powerful, influential organization. Now, if those who keep this secret across the various fiefdoms, as you call them, of the government have decades and decades of experience, how are whistleblowers, regardless of any promised protections, ever going to be truly sure of their safety and confidentiality when they're having to deal with that sort of level of power and secrecy?
We have to. We have to. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. We shouldn't be afraid to speak truth to power. That's the very definition of democracy. Sometimes to be a patriot, you have to do things that don't seem very patriotic at the time, right? You know, you have to sometimes go against the grain, you know, and you do it for the right reasons. You're not doing it to hurt people. You're doing it to help people. You know, I mean, look, I would never compare myself to this person, but look at, for example, people like Braveheart, right? I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't like him or what he was doing, but he was doing what he thought he needed to do for the betterment of everybody else, right? And history is full of people like that. Now, let me be clear. I'm not comparing myself to someone like that. I'm just simply saying those feelings that people like that have, I understand very well, because that's my motivation. I didn't want to go against the grain. I didn't want to leave a high-paying job and a cushy job and being at the top of my game in intelligence. I mean, I could have been retired by now with writing my own book about how intelligence works, right? But sometimes you have to make decisions that aren't necessarily convenient or comfortable, right? You have to do what's right. If you take an oath, whether it's to your spouse never to cheat on them, or in my case, you know, to never cheat on my country, right? When I took an allegiance to defend this country from all enemies and foreign and domestic, that's a sacred oath, brother. I mean, that's a lifelong oath. You're never relieved of that oath after you get out of the government. Okay, you don't have to worry about that anymore. There's no such proviso. That's lifelong. And so I did what I did because I took that oath, and that meant something very serious to me. And so that was my motivation to come out. I thought that people needed to know. And by the way, it was a team effort. It wasn't just me. You know, people come out and say, yeah, Oh, you're a hero. No, I'm not a hero. And I say this over and over again. And I know, because I know the difference, because I've been with heroes overseas and in combat, and some of them never came back, right? So I know the difference. I'm not a hero. I'm just an average schmuck who serves his country and believes in what he's doing. And I think pretty much anybody in my shoes probably would have done the same thing, probably would have no choice to do the same thing. In fact, maybe even done a better job than me. It just turned out that I happened to be, you know, the guy in the barrel at the time and made the decision that I did. But that's not special. That's anybody who loves our country would do the same. I'm not saying it was easy. It wasn't easy. But that's what we do, you know. That's what makes the world work. People who actually have value into something, right? They believe in something, and you can't, for any amount of money, you can't pay somebody off for that.
And I think it's fair, if people have read or listened to your book, you don't constantly take the credit for things. You're always mentioning you were with other people, names like Hal Putov, Jim Semivan, Christopher Mellon, you know, Lukatsky.
Jim Lukatsky, Chris Mellon, David Grush. You know, yeah. That is a guy who gave up a hell of a lot to have this conversation to the American public and who got shellacked for it. I mean, just brutally, you know. And I think that's a disgrace. And by the way, they deserve credit, maybe more credit than me. They're incredible human beings who've done incredible work. Bob Bigelow back in the early days, and Senator Harry Reid, and Senator Ted Stevens, Senator Inouye, right, and John Glenn. And there's a whole long chain of individuals. I'm just one little link in a huge chain. And you know, hopefully at some point those stories will come forward and people will begin to learn just how comprehensive the U.S. government's effort into studying UAP and UFOs really is.
And the We hear a lot about the public side of it now from yourself and what you can talk about. Some really interesting stuff. We'll talk about Chapter 8 and not expecting you to remember that, Lou. Groups like the Collins Elite being at loggerheads against legacy UEP programs, I thought was really interesting, that little nugget. And personally hadn't really thought about gatekeepers or secrecy keepers being at odds with each other, and that's a really interesting concept when you think they're not on our side as such. So with the powers that be not necessarily working together harmoniously, is there any chance that good can come from that in terms of any UAP disclosure, that you start to get leaks or dissenting individuals who want to maybe break rank?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, speaking truth to power is critical, especially in the national security apparatus for any country. Look, I want to be clear here, because people will say Collins Elite, and they say, oh, you know, Christian fundamentalists. Look, there's nothing wrong with being necessarily a fundamentalist. There's a problem with being a radical. Doesn't matter whether it's Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Buddhist, or any type of radicalization is problematic, because it can interfere with proper decision making that's good for the better, the larger group. So I want to be clear, I'm not picking on, I'm deeply spiritual myself. So this is not a Christian thing. People say, oh, you crazy Christian fundamentalists. No, wait a minute. That's not what I was saying. What I was simply saying is that radicalism by any other label is still radicalism, right? You just you're wearing a Christian robe, or you're wearing a robe by any other thing. Doesn't matter. So I want to be very careful to separate, you know, those individuals who I identified in the book. It's not that they're Christians, so they're bad. It's the opposite. They were bad. They happened to be Christian. And even I don't think they were bad. Ultimately, I think they were doing in their heart what they felt is right. And for that, I can't blame them. I don't agree with it, but I don't blame them for them doing what they did, because in their hearts, they believe they're doing the right thing for the right reasons. This goes to the bigger conversation of truths in the world. There are two types of truths in the world. Believe it or not, people say, no, there's no truth is only the truth. No, it's not. It's actually, there's two types. There's universal truth, such as, for example, this gravity, right? Affects us all equally, or at least most of us, maybe me a little more sometimes. But gravity is real for everyone. And then you have, so that's a universal truth. Then you have a personal truth. And a personal truth can be just as strongly adopted and believed and accepted as a universal truth, but it's not by everybody. So politics, religion, culture, things like that, where people are willing to die for because it's just as true to them as gravity, but it's not universally accepted. And so we need to understand that the difference between a personal truth and a universal truth, because there are differences. And do we have a right to allow our personal truths to affect our decision-making process as if it was a universal truth? Honestly, I can't answer that. I don't know that. I personally try to separate both. And that's why I'm always very clear to caveat what is my opinion. I may believe it very strongly, but it's still my opinion. Right. And I'm very clear to make that distinction, where others, it's maybe a little more challenging to do that.
I'd recommend many folks, if they haven't already, because I've seen the numbers, to go and watch your interview with Kurt Jai Mungo on Theories of Everything. Really detailed interview. Kurt's wonderful as well. And you get a very different aspect to the conversation, I feel, given his background and expertise. And you talk about corruption within that. And you talk about, you know, religious corruption, moral corruption, maybe touching on some of those points you've just made. And I wonder that, speaking of those folks who have gone behind due process and have made decisions without the correct oversight, which largely is a lot of the conversation from your point of view and your colleague's point of view, and you say that's a dangerous, slippy slope to start going down. However, in the movies, the greatest villains are the ones who, while in the wrong, truly believe they're doing something right, or at least they're relatable. And I wonder, is there an element to this gatekeeping or secret keeping you feel, given what you know and what others know, that is relatable for national security reasons or otherwise?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Look, I'll be the first one to tell you. What I'm doing, I believe, is the right thing to do, but I could be wrong. Maybe the other side is right. Maybe Americans aren't ready. The world isn't ready to have this conversation. I disagree with that, and I think we have to give people the chance to at least make that decision for themselves. But I've been asked many times, did you do the right thing by coming out? I think I did. That's a personal truth. That's not a universal truth. There are people right now in the Pentagon that will tell you to your face that I made the wrong decision and I'm a traitor and I never should have had this conversation publicly because I put the government in an impossible situation. Could they be right? Yeah, they could. They absolutely could. I don't think so, but they could be. So I'm very aware of that. People say, well, did you do the right thing? I don't know. I hope so. Ultimately that's for you to decide. do you want this information or not? And if you don't, then, maybe I made the wrong decision. But I've always sided on the argument that, look, even if the information's bad, I want to know. If I go to the doctor and the doctor knows I have cancer, do I want to know? Do I want to know? No, but do I want to know? Yes, I want to know. I need to know. So maybe I have a chance to do something about it. It's kind of like those inconvenient conversations when someone says, look, do you think my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my significant other is cheating on me, right? People say, do you really want to know? Like, yeah, I really want to know. And then they find out and they're like, ooh, maybe I don't really want to know. Yes. I think I want to know until I know. And then I realize I really didn't want to know. This conversation could be something like that. And I respect that and I understand that. But again, that needs to be your decision, not mine, right? You need to be presented with the facts. And then you get to decide what those facts mean to you. And at the end of the day, if you go want to watch the Kardashians and, MTV or anything like that, then that's fine. That's your life to do so. But at least you've had the chance to make that decision for yourself. It hasn't been kept from you by some bureaucrat who's made the decision that, you can't handle the truth. Wait a minute. That's for you to decide, not that person, right? And that's what drives me to have the conversation that I'm having now. And, ultimately that's for you to decide if I did the right thing or not me.
Going to jump into your academic background now, Lou. Now, your background is, and I hope I get this right, parasitology, which is the study of parasites, biology, microbiology, and the like. And I wonder, have you read or seen The Three-Body Problem?
I am aware of The Three-Body Problem. I am.
Okay. And the big hit on Netflix for a lot of folks recently, it was like Friends with UFOs, as it kind of turned out, but the book's a lot better in many people's minds. But a key premise in that is another intelligent civilization has sent a tiny little particle essentially to the Earth, which is a supercomputer. It's surveying us ahead of their arrival, and we don't even know it's here until it starts kind of interfering and messing with things. In ufology, the research so often is done with things we can see with our eyes or sensor systems can see that are sizable. And I wonder, you've spoken in your book about implants being found in surgeons that are evading movement when they're trying to get them out. And these things are pretty small. During your studies and time at the Pentagon or since, do you know of anything where we are looking at the micro level to see if we are being visited by a non-human intelligence?
So my focus primarily, and I can't speak for everybody else at the Pentagon, but that was part of our program. My focus was primarily nuts and bolts and macro level. So we're talking about objects that can interfere with military weapon systems, pose a air flight safety issue to our combat aircraft, and have the ability to interfere with our nuclear capabilities. I am not a trained surgeon. I am not a trained medical practitioner or someone who conducts forensics analysis on these types of things. We had people that had those types of certifications, and so we relied on their input and their analysis quite heavily. As for miniaturization, I mean, the greater philosophical question is that, is it possible? Well, look at our own species, right? We miniaturize everything. We go from my gosh, one can look at anything, right? Look at the first computer, how big it was. Mm. Compare that to a microprocessor, right? Compare the first communication device, and now compare it to discrete communication devices that we use. Everything that we have started off much, much bigger, and then we begin to miniaturize and get smaller. Antennas, for example, everything. We miniaturize, make it smaller, lighter, easier to use, more functional, more capable. So I don't think it's a far stretch to assume or presume that maybe there's technology involved with UAP that is micro or even nano. Look at some of the world's smallest. Get online and just type in the world's smallest engine, right? And you have to use an electron microscope to actually see it, right? It's literally, it's just a chain of atoms, right? Think about that for just a moment, from where we went from the steam engine and the internal combustion engine back just a century ago to now what we've done. So yes, it makes perfect sense. But again, we always look at things in human terms. We always tend to look at everything through the optic of where we are in our own personal development. Well, for example, you have organizations like SETI. Well, we're looking for techno signatures and radio frequencies within our Milky Way of advanced life. Well, don't look now. That's not really that advanced. It may seem like it's advanced at the time, right? Especially when before we were using smoke signals and now we're using, Morse code. But look where we are now, right? 5G, right? Wi-Fi, LTE, and now we're getting into quantum communication, which there is no radio frequency. There is no RF signature, right? Is that the way that true advanced civilizations communicate? Quite possibly. So we may be looking, it's like saying, I want to look for signs of an advanced civilization by looking for, bonfires on the moon. Well, that's not that advanced, right? Chances are you might want to be looking for something else. And the same holds true as well when we're talking about, right now in current day, we're thinking everything out there that's advanced is going to kind of look kind of like our stuff, but maybe a little cooler, maybe a little faster, a little bit more. When in reality, it could be a completely, completely different paradigm altogether, something we are completely ill-prepared for, something that we have no idea even exists.
And that's what I wonder, even if there was ever a virus or a disease or anything linked to some kind of non-human intelligence, and you wouldn't know, would you?
I'll tell you right now, that's a good point. When I was in school at University of Miami, I studied virology, and I had a professor who said that there was every indication that a virus was not natural to this planet, that it was in fact an alien life form. Now, I kind of chuckled at the time, but he said, look, what is a virus? Well, a virus is a capsid with these legs that does not have DNA, and yet it replicates. It does all the things that life forms do, and it will infect a host, and it will multiply and do all the things that we associate as being alive, and yet it's not alive. So it is, when you look at something, how a virus works, there are some scientists today that believe viruses are of extraterrestrial origin because there's no natural evolution here on Earth to suggest that they evolved naturally. Now, I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but you can look now online and anybody can see that there are professionals that will actually state, yes, this may not be from Earth. So is it really that unrealistic? No, not at all.
And just to clarify, that's pure speculation, folks. Disclaimer, you can see a lot of things online that aren't necessarily true, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, what I'm saying, though, is that, even when I was in school, long time ago, I tell people this is gray, not blonde, but Moses and I were in college together. There were scientists, renowned scientists, even back then, that were speculating that a virus may not be of terrestrial origin.
So going from the micro to the macro, like you mentioned, Ross Coulthart, who you know well, and you've done a wonderful interview with on News Nation, and he's carved out a wonderful niche for himself through News Nation and his reality check show, people should check that one out, discussed a while back a UFO so big that it couldn't be moved and was actually built over, Lou, and it's still used to this day as a working building. And I wonder, was that something you had heard of at the time? And how common could that be?
I unfortunately cannot discuss that. I have to be very careful. I can discuss what is in the book because I have approval to do that. What you are referring to is something that I would not be able to confirm or deny. And let me be very clear with that. I cannot elaborate at all. If someone else has elaborated on it, that's fine. I have not been given any permission to discuss anything like that.
Help me then, because on a similar tact, and it's my next question anyway, shape's often discussed as well as size. But on Joe Rogan, you mentioned a USO, so underwater, you know, UFO basically, so big that it was the size of a small city block captured off an oil rig. So some people are going to hear this, and I'm used to the UFO conversation, but wonder why you can mention that, but not potentially the UFO under the building.
Because I'm not discussing sources and methods. I'm not discussing capabilities or locations. I'm not discussing an actual program. I'm discussing simply what was observed. You know, you're asking me to confirm or deny something, the existence of something. I don't have permission to do that. What I can do is simply say from my personal observations, I've seen a video of an event. Right. But I'm not saying where that event is, under what circumstances, yeah, what collection capabilities, where that place was, how long ago it was. You know, I'm not giving any of that. It's just anecdotal. And so that in itself isn't classified. If I give you details of that, I could get in serious trouble. So I'm very careful not to do that.
And that USO on Rogan was a big one for many folks. It was one of the big clips that went viral online, understandably. How often are UFOs that size picked up from your expertise and knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, we have some information to suggest that they're a little more common than people might think. You know, there's another example in Puerto Rico in the late 1990s that was given to the New York Times about a very similar sized object coming to the surface and a frogman dangling down from a line and a cruise missile being sucked underwater and disappearing. There are the examples like the Phoenix Lights, where there, in some cases, reported these enormous triangles, or in some case, boomerang-type craft that seem to be almost a mile wide. So they are more common than people might expect. I had one source that I had a conversation with. I'll be careful what I say. I won't say when or where. But it was a cylindrical object, actually kind of like this, huge, that hovered over their vehicle. And it was about 200 feet, it was like the size of a big yacht. And it was just a perfect cylinder with some lights, and it followed the vehicle. They could see it through the sunroof, and they were absolutely terrified. At first, they joked about it because they heard a report on the radio. They thought it'd be funny to go and try to find it, and apparently it found them. And the father of one of these individuals was somebody who I worked with, a colleague I worked with, and they were very concerned. So, you know, it's... size is probably irrelevant. I think, look, we have technology ourselves. We have, you know, a Corvette, and then we have an aircraft carrier. It would make sense, right? I mean, depending what you're using it for, if I'm going to go cruising around with just another person with me, I'll probably take the Corvette. But if I've got to take 5,000, you know, closest buddies of mine somewhere, I'm probably going to use the aircraft carrier. Different utility, right? Different purposes of each vehicle.
Yeah, form versus function on that. And I'm sure I'm going to get this right, but one of my favorite interviews you've done, Lou, was with astronaut Terry Wirtz, and that was a couple of years ago now, and you actually discussed the shape versus potential function as well. So I'd recommend people go and check that out, because that may have, pardon the pun, went under the radar back a few years ago when you were doing quite a lot of interviews back then. So definitely check that one out. In the book, what excited a lot of folks, Lou, was you mentioned many past events. So classic cases like Rendlesham, Malmstrom, Roswell, the Tic Tac, to name a few. Something that I've been thinking, though, is we heard for some time that these events, particularly things like the Tic Tac, were occurring almost daily with the US military. And are you surprised in the last few years, even, we haven't had another Tic Tac event leak to the public with more video pictures or maybe some more stories?
Not at all. In fact, there's been a lot of leaks, but no, I think now that the government's finally taking this seriously and people now feel that they can actually start reporting some of this information, they're trying to give the system a chance to work. So I'm actually kind of relieved because that's, you know, some people that's an indicator that, these events aren't happening. No, they're happening. They're happening a lot, very regularly. What's happening is the system's now beginning to ingest this information so people don't have to leak the information. It can go through the proper channels. Now, the jury's still out whether or not, you know, the proper channels are actually functional and they're, you know, are they working properly, but they have been set up. And so I think that's actually a good indicator. Now, I know from the public's perspective, it's like, well, how are we going to know? Well, there's mechanisms for that as well, you know, so there's...
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The government has to have certain information. Then they get to report to the Congress, and the Congress says, okay, we want this unclassified. Then that information gets unclassified, and then it gets distributed to the American people. So I'm okay with that. You know, you have recently a bilateral information-sharing relationship now between Japan and the United States for the sole purposes of sharing UAP-related information. There's other countries now that want to enter into similar agreements with the United States because they have their own UAP information. So the cogs of the gears are finally, as rusted as they may be, are finally beginning to turn. And the only way to knock off the rust is to turn those gears. You know, the more they turn, the more efficient they become, and then things start to work.
So sometimes that lack of information or silence can be a good thing because the actual due processes are happening in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it could be a good indicator, right? So now we need to make sure that there's proper oversight. Now that the gears are turning, we need someone to come in and monitor the gears and make sure that they're turning at the right ratios, the right speeds, the cogs are meeting correctly. And that's part of Congress's job to make sure, okay, now for oversight, tell us what you're seeing, report to us, how is this working, right? And so I think that's a good indicator. We just got to keep the heat and keep pushing Congress to do the right thing and pass new legislation and protect the whistleblowers and get that accountability within the executive branch to now report to the legislative branch.
Good time to mention that then. The UAP Disclosure Act failed last year, a very comprehensive bill sponsored by Schumer and Rounds. It's going back through some of the big call-outs being eminent domain, and the Presidential Review Board, whistleblower protections are a huge part of that. What chances of success do you give it second time round?
I remain hopeful and optimistic. I encourage anybody who's interested to support this effort. I know there's some contention in there with some folks about eminent domain, but I'd hate to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a good piece of legislation. I think it's going to really help drive where we want to go on this topic. You know, could we always do an amendment later on if eminent domain is really a big rub for some folks? Sure, but I'd hate to throw out the entire legislation simply because of the piece of eminent domain. Look, eminent domain is unnecessary to even write because the government already has that authority. So if it's that big of a deal for folks, just don't put it in the legislation. I think the rest of the legislation is really, really good. I would encourage anybody, if they want further disclosure, you know, call if you're an American citizen, call your representative and tell them, hey man, this is important to you. I think that's important. Maybe write a letter, write an email, you know, make a phone call.
I'll put some links to help folks do that in the US, because 60 or 70% of this audience online and on audio are in the US. So folks, if you check out those links in the description, there's easy templates you can use to either make phone calls or write letters. So that'll definitely help. It's a massive thing you can do. In the book, Lou, you talk about orbs, and it's a subject I can be on the fence with, depending on the source and the evidence, because a lot of ring doorbells pick up dust and insects flying past, and people pass them off as orbs. But what you describe, you, your family, and your neighbour seeing, is something that undeniably wasn't dust or the light. Now, you mentioned you saw these green orbs floating by in the house between 5 and 8 p.m., going down the hallway. Your house isn't filled with CCTV and whatnot, and you never attempted to film them. But I wonder, did you speak to any colleagues following these experiences, either in ATIP or professionally?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, this is what's so intriguing. Look, let me first caveat. Here are the facts. These luminous balls, green diffuse balls of light, whatever they were, right? Between the size of a volleyball and sometimes the size of a baseball, they would differ in sizes, were not only witnessed by myself and my spouse, but also my children and our neighbors. And it started occurring when I really started getting involved in ATIP, and then ended when I was no longer involved. What's also very important is that this was experienced by other people in the program as well. It wasn't just me. It wasn't an isolated incident. This was occurring regularly and routinely with other people that were involved in the ATIP program. Now, let me also state, is it 100% conclusive that this is related to UFOs or UAP? No, it's not. It is still possible this could be some sort of natural atmospheric, as crazy as it may sound, ball lightning or St. Elmo's fire, or maybe I've got some bad conduit in the house and it's creating an arc discharge, and now I've got a plasma ball, you know, of ionized air. Who the hell knows, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But what I do know is that these balls of light were witnessed by, again, not just myself and my family and our neighbors, but other people in the ATIP program, who, by the way, had a lot more experiences than just that. Not my story to tell. But I suspect at some point in the future, those stories will be told by those individuals. And it wasn't just us experiencing these green luminous balls. Actually, I had a buddy of mine, I won't say, he's actually in the book. A buddy of mine, well, yeah, I can say it, John Robert. He's in the book. And a very good friend of mine, and we've been colleagues for 30 years, just about, all over the world, chasing bad guys. And he had experiences as well. To mention some other folks whose names I can't mention yet, but, you know, very, very interesting things started happening at his house. He's never been public about it, so I'm not going to discuss that. But he's just one of many, many people who've been part of our program who've had very, very interesting experiences at their houses during the time of ATIP.
It's interesting that other folks had these at the same time as well, and there may or may not be a correlation there, like you say, with the program, surveillance, whatever it may have been. It could be completely coincidental, but do you feel any part of your remote viewing history, which you've touched on, opened some kind of door to these objects more so than others? Do you think that was any element of it?
You know, it's hard to tell. I couldn't tell you either way, because I still struggle even with the idea of remote viewing, to be honest with you. You know, is it real? Yes. Do we use it in the government? Yes. Do we use it in law enforcement? Yes. Are we still using it? But I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know why it works. I don't know how pervasive it is. I know it seems like a lot of people can do it. It's really not that special, is it, if most people can do it? So I don't know if there's a correlation there. It may just be a vestigial aspect of being human, right? Just like an appendix. When we were sometime thousands of years ago, where we didn't have the pervasiveness and the sophistication of verbal language to verbalize and communicate, we relied on this sense to communicate. Just like when two dogs enter a room and there's this nonverbal communication occurring. You know, maybe it's when you're traveling and you pick up the phone and you call your spouse and say, "Hey, honey, I wanted to say hi." And they're like, "Oh my gosh, I was just thinking of you," right? Be something that simple, that it's probably based somewhere in quantum mechanics, if I had to guess. Again, pure speculation, but a lot of scientists now are saying that human consciousness is actually a quantum process that is occurring in the brain. And if that's the case, well, we do know that, you know, quantum mechanics is a very interesting field of study, and all sorts of possibilities can happen. You can have the duality principle, you can be literally in two places at once. Doesn't sound, you know, as Einstein referred to spooky action at a distance. There's these weird little nuances of quantum mechanics that don't seem logical and definitely fall outside the realm of Newtonian physics and even Einstein's theory of relativity. And yet we're observing these things, these characteristics in the laboratory. So maybe it's tied to that. Do I think that there's a correlation between UFOs and remote viewers? What I can tell you definitively is that there's been remote viewing sessions where remote viewers have been targeted to an adversarial technology and have seen UFOs in the remote viewing sessions following the target that we are targeting ourselves.
Someone you mention in the book is Russell Targ, and I just had nearly 2 hours with Russell just a couple of weeks ago. So if anyone wants to learn more about remote viewing, there's not many better folks, probably along with Hal Putov, to listen to remote viewing than Russell. So check that one out, folks, if you want to learn a little bit more.
Jim McMonagall as well is another one who's very good. My mentor was probably the best remote viewer in the Army at the time. So that's why I'm going to be careful. You'll say, oh, you good at remote viewing? Well, not really. You know, I play the drums, but next to Travis Barker, I don't really play the drums very well. So, no, I'm not going to put myself anywhere in that category.
Lou, I'm bringing back an old format that was very popular that through laziness I've not done for a long time, but I think just for yourself, I want to get this chance for a lot of listeners' topics to fire into the quick fire round. So I'm going to mention a few different things and you can say as little or as much on each of them as you want and then we'll wrap up, okay? Do you know what? A lot of the people on my Discord channel hate the phrase buckle up, so I'm not going to use that one. So you can leave the seatbelt off, but drive safely, folks. There's my advice. But the first one is the James Fox documentary, The Program. Your thoughts?
I don't know much about it. James Fox is a great producer and director, but I don't know anything really about his project and haven't been part of it, nor have I seen it. So I can't comment on it.
Hopefully we will see that soon. James has been doing a lot of work in the background on that. Another documentary that was confirmed through yourself was Dan Farah, who was involved in your book deal initially as well. Can you talk about the documentary Dan Farah is producing and your involvement in that in any way?
Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to discuss anything that Mr. Farah may be involved with at this time.
Not yet. Your thoughts on, and here's one for you, the Nazca mummies that have been doing the rounds over the last year or so?
Again, I haven't been involved. I'm a little disappointed the way that it was brought out, whether it's legitimate or illegitimate. I think it was brought out in such a sensationalized way that it really diminished some of the value and maybe some of the impact of it. You know, bringing it to the Mexican Congress in the way that it was a little bit showboaty, and I think it turned a lot of people off. So even if it turned out to be legitimate, the problem is it, you know, first impressions weren't that great. You know, so I don't have any real comment. Again, I wasn't part of that. I haven't studied the mummies and I don't have the qualifications. You know, I'm not a biological forensic scientist. And so I wouldn't be able to tell you one way or the other. I do know that some people said there's some very interesting aspects of it and compelling aspects of it, but I'll let the experts handle that.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Your thoughts on the work of the Sol Foundation, spearheaded by Gary Nolan and Peter Steffens?
Fantastic, fantastic. Great organization. I got to tell you, too, that Gary is an incredible human being. If you ever have a chance to talk to him, one of the smartest guys you'll ever meet, one of the most sincere guys you'll ever meet, an incredible national treasure to the United States and the world, you know, Nobel nominee, but more importantly, just a wonderful human being. And he has done a lot for our country that he can't talk about, but I know what he's done. He's put a lot on the line and his credibility. You know, if there's a few guys that I would want in my foxhole, Gary's one of them.
I've been fortunate to interview Gary a few times and wonderful to speak to. And he says I have a massive forehead. So that was my takeaway from it as well. So, but he's a very funny guy.
Well, I've been told I have a five head. And I asked, what is a five head? They said, apparently it's more than a forehead. So yeah. I understand. I think I suffer. But now that my hair is receding, as you can see here, you know, I suspect at some point I'm just going to look like a bowling ball.
Yeah, mine's just running away at an alarming rate as well from my face. Another thing mentioned in the book is that 23-minute video that's been rumoured and talked about online for a long time. You mention it was filmed near another country's sensitive nuclear facilities. So is that all the reason that we will never see that video made public?
More than likely, because there's a lot in that video that shows sources and methods. And you know, if there was a way to strip that out in the metadata, maybe, but remembering that video, it would be very difficult to do that.
Sure. This one, I'm hoping you can clear up some. There's a lot of online nonsense right now, especially on the X or Twitter community. Your former colleague, Jay Stratton, is rumoured to have a book coming out, and a lot of folks are saying that both sides of your story and his story won't add up. Do you think that's in any way true, or would you expect there to be a lot of correlation?
Yeah, no, I don't know what Jay's writing. You know, Jay and I had interesting and similar experiences and also different experiences, worked for different organizations while working for the program. I suspect that, you know, a lot of what Jay is writing may probably reinforce what I'm saying, but he also had his own experiences as well. And so there's, you know, just like you and your friend that you meet at, you work together at work with, you'll have a lot of same experiences. But if you're working in one office and he's working in another office, you're not going to have exactly the same experiences, right? You're going to have different but similar experiences that basically support or reinforce the greater effort. You know, Jay's a very smart man. He has done a lot of good things for this country, a lot. And I'm really looking forward to his book coming out. I think it's going to be very revelatory. I know what he's been through. And I'm really excited for him, and I'm excited for you all to know what he's been through.
Last couple, Lou, then we can let you go. Danny Sheehan was on with me, and you know Danny well, of course, and he mentioned the CIA's Golden Domes project, where they had a centre where they were detecting UFOs even when cloaked, as his wording was, not on radar and through a new technology. Was that something you're aware of? And it was similar to me in terms of like Project Interloper.
I cannot elaborate on that, unfortunately. Any type of US technology or capability, I would not be able to elaborate on.
The book ends, Lou, with a chapter called New Horizons. And I wonder if in 5 years' time you're coming back to write the second edition, what are some of those new chapters going to be called? Would you hope?
Wow. Fait accompli means done. Whereas imminent means it's coming. Fait accompli means we're there.
And you maybe touched on it there, saying we are there, but is that you're done or it's the next step and someone else is taking over?
Oh my goodness. Well, look, I am not the most qualified to lead this effort. People keep saying you're the spearhead of disclosure. That may be true, but I shouldn't be. There's a lot more people out there far more qualified than me, smarter than me, more savvy than me. I cannot wait till the day comes when somebody else and other people can continue to carry this conversation forward. It's not because I don't want to. It's because I don't have the requisite qualifications, I don't think, to push this to the next level. You know, I'm very good at getting things moving, but once they're moving, you need a professional race car driver. You know, I can get the car in the garage, I can get the engine started. But to win a Formula F1 Formula race, you need a professional race car driver. And I don't think I'm that. You know, I don't. I wish I was, but I don't. You know, I'm very, my my skill sets and talents are very limited and focused to certain things. And, you know, just like I'm not a politician, I'm diplomatic and I try to be as diplomatic as possible, but I'm not a politician. You know, I wear my mind on my sleeve. What you see is what you get. So am I the best person to be a spokesperson for ultimately for disclosure? Probably not, you know? So hopefully someone way more qualified than me steps up to the plate here soon and can take this over. And then I can just sit back, fade off into the sunset quietly, sit in the bleachers and support them, you know, from the bleachers. Because I'm no star quarterback. Okay. And I know that. And I think most people would agree. I can throw a ball and catch a ball, I guess. But when you're the only one out in the field, yeah, it's easy to be the quarterback. But when you have a real team come out on the field, then again, my analogy about Travis Barker and me being a drummer, you know, I can say I'm a drummer all day long until I you know, play next to someone like of his caliber. And then all of a sudden I realize, you know, I'm just a monkey banging on the bongos.
At some point, though, does your wife, Jennifer, put her hand on yours and say enough? Or has that even came close to happening in the last couple of years?
Every day. This has caused great stress on my family. You know, I won't go into detail here because it's not appropriate, but this has taken a great toll on me. It has ruined any semblance of peace. And, you know, a marriage is a relationship that's 50-50. And if I can't give my, actually, it's not, it's 100%, 100%. Let me clarify that. Any relationship is 100%, 100%. And, you know, there is a lot of times I can't give my 100% because I'm giving it to something else. I'm giving it to this. And it's not fair to her. And it's caused a great amount of stress. And fortunately, she's an incredible human being and has tolerated it. But, you know, there may come a day where she can't, where she won't. And, you know, I can't blame her. My loyalty is to my children and my family and my country. I don't want to have to choose between the three.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little brown.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.